The decomposed body of a San Francisco businessman is found floating in the California aqueduct. Investigators initially suspect a family member, but without evidence, the case goes cold. It takes detectives several decades to find the killer. And what's going on, and welcome to season 4, episode 1 of Conspiracy Fears and Mysteries. And as you can hear, I changed the intro and everything because it's a new season, and I figured, you know what, I'm gonna dedicate it, I'm gonna stick to what is working. And all of you from writing, and you know, from writing me and all that stuff on my on social media and stuff, and even here on the podcast, you like the true crime. I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if I woke up a sleeping giant or whatever the case may be, but y'all love the true crime. I mean, the smaller episodes or the other episodes that I have done with actual conspiracies and whatever and all the other things, they still get downloads and listens, but y'all really are into the true crime, and I set myself up for that. I opened up that door and I never closed it. I didn't diversify my portfolio. I kind of stuck to that because I'm into true crime. Okay, so I switched it. I said, you know what, let me just stick to this. I'm not going to change the name though, because it'll be too much to rebrand all everything. You know, it's just, I'm not going to do that. But you know, either way, it is what it is, and I'm sticking to my guns. So, in this episode of CFM, we're gonna dive into. I watch a lot of true crime shows, guys. So we're diving into one of the shows that I watch, and I just recently started watching this one, and you can catch it on Amazon. And there is a whole like true crime within Amazon video. There's a whole like true crime like app that's inside that app. You know, I didn't even know you could get other apps inside the app, but I found out the other day. And there's a show called Married with Secrets. Incredible. I mean, you can make a true crime show out of anything. You know husbands that kill wives with red cars, and you'll still have a few episodes to make. You know, you'll have wives that kill their friends' husbands, and you'll find, I mean, murder is murder, right? Well, we're looking at season 2, episode 5 of this. This is one of the ones that really intrigued me, and the one after this, and I will do another episode on that one too, because it had to do with law enforcement, and it was really, really intriguing. But this show really intrigues me, and it's really, really good to watch if you like, you know, good true crime. And this particular case here is really, really crazy. It was really crazy to me. So this particular case, let's go ahead and begin, takes place in Tracy, California on August 7th, 1980, where we have two guys that were going fishing in that, in an aqueduct over there in California. And they come across a dead body that was in an advanced stage of decomposition. Now, the way they found the body, it was in a bag. It had chains around it, and like I said, it was in an advanced stage of decomposition. It was made to not be found in a timely manner, and it was an obvious homicide. So when the police got there, they made that determination really fast, because obviously it was in a bag. You know, nobody naturally dies inside of a bag with chains around them, with a big chain around them. Okay, so That's the beginning of this case. And then we go over to Denver, Colorado, and you will see why, how everything ties together. So we go over to Denver, Colorado, November of 1980. We have a 30-year-old Kathy Speer. She has a daughter. She was about, between 8 and 11. I think she's probably like 10. Named Shania Garcia. Now, Kathy was an alcoholic in her 20s, and she was recovering from that. She was going to, you know, AA, and she's going to, you know, those meetings. She had a therapist or whatever you want to call it. And so she was doing pretty good for herself, you know, as far as coming out of that whole situation is hard for a lot of people. She wanted to be a beautician. She was good at that, apparently. She was working as a waitress, and according to her, she wasn't very good at it, but people liked her. She was a very good looking woman. She was beautiful. People liked her. I mean, she did okay. She was a single mom working as a waitress, and she did okay for herself. She befriends a 31-year-old Steve Marcom. Steve Marcom. I hope I'm getting that right. I don't care if I am. But she befriends this 31-year-old Steve Marcom. And she works with him. He's one of the cooks over there. And eventually they get into a relationship. Now, he'd always flirt with her and whatever, but she never really took it seriously. You know, it was like, okay, whatever. But they got into like a really friendly relationship at first, whatever. And Steve, would buy her flowers here and there, whatever. There was, one particular incident where, she was counting her tips. She needed money for a trip for her daughter, Shania. And Steve came and he said, look, you know, I told you, I'm single, I don't have kids, I'm not married, I'll lend you the money, or I'll give you the money, go ahead, you know, my father passed away, he left me, he had a trust fund, blah, blah, I'm working because, you know, she asked him, well, if you have all this money, why do you work here? He said, well, you know, he's like, I get bored, basically is what he told her. I have money, but, you know, I work here in the diner, and then on the weekends I'm skiing or whatever. You know, that's what he told her. So, fast forward, she ended up going on a date with him after all him. Come on, go on a date with me. Really nice guy. You know, really nice guy. Started talking to her. Hey, come on a date with me. And they actually get into a relationship. Now, like I said before, Steve had money from his dad, so that's what he told her and or friends or whatever. And he told her he used to work for the government. So the story was to Steve that he told her and that Kathy believed was, okay, this guy used to work for the government. It didn't pay much, so he left that government work. And his father passed away and left him this big trust fund or some money or whatever. So they end up getting together. They're boyfriend and girlfriend now. Really nice guy. He cooks for her. You know, he's in the house. You know, they live together. Out of nowhere, few months later, maybe 2 or 3 months later, he buys her a car. Not just any car, but he buys her a Porsche. Now, Porsches are pretty expensive. Okay, so you already know, like, okay, you know, and I don't know about you, but that would throw up a red flag for me. Like, if I was with a chick and she tells me the story, oh, look, my mom, whatever. I mean, I'm a different type of dude. I'm a dude, I take care of myself, whatever. I don't really like people buying me stuff. That's just me, you know. My wife does it when she, you know, because she's my wife and whatever. But I don't know. In a relationship, I would think it would throw up a red flag. For me, it would. I'm sure for some ladies, it would. Like, for some women, I know some people just don't care. Like, yeah, he's buying me stuff, or she's buying me stuff, whatever. He doesn't care. But he bought her a Porsche. Okay. A red Porsche, whatever. And she was happy. Oh, my God. This is, you know, I'm I got a good boyfriend, whatever. She's not thinking anything bad of it, you know. So a couple months later, in June of 1981, they go ahead and they tie the knot. They get married. So they go ahead, they get married, and they settle in Colorado. Now, Steve, he becomes some kind of masseuse or something, opens up a masseuse probably, or works in a masseuse thing. They really didn't get too much information on that. But Kathy finally got to open up her cosmetology shop. So she was doing her cosmetology and her beauty and all her, you know, beautician stuff. And they were living the American dream. I mean, what you say, her daughter's being taken care of now. She's taking care of her daughter. He's a nice guy. You know, they're doing pretty well financially. So, one day, Kathy's at home and she's having an issue, with the toilet. And we don't know how toilets work unless you got one of the fancy ones. You know, you got the back thing where you lay your back. That's where you open up if, like, the water's not coming out and you want to check what's wrong. Normally, that's the first thing you check. You open up. It was one of the old school. This was back in the 80s, early 80s. So she opens it up to check why the toilet's not flushing right, whatever. She finds two bricks of gold. Okay, two bricks in a bag. Now, I wish I could open up my toilet and find some gold in there. But anyway, she finds two bricks of gold inside the toilet, inside of a bag. So naturally, she wants to know, well, what the hell is this? Why are there two bricks of gold in a bag in my toilet? So she confronts Steve, her husband, as any spouse would do, right? And he comes, you know, he's perplexed. I hope I'm using that word right. And, you know, he's like, so he tells her that he used to work for the CIA. And, he was involved in some espionage and stuff like this. And the CIA was trying to get him. And I don't remember exactly where he told her he got that from. Where he got the gold from. But he made up a story about the CIA espionage. Now you can imagine it's a big, big story. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, look, I haven't been honest with you. I work for the CIA, blah, blah, blah. You know, and she's like, what the heck or whatever, okay. I don't know. You can imagine how you would take it, okay, if your spouse told you, oh, by the way, hon, I know we've been married for like 3 years, but I work for the CIA, by the way. So now, let's go back to that body in the aqueduct in California. So, in San Joaquin County, the body is identified as Lester Marks. Now, Lester Marks had a son named Ronnie. And Lester Marks was a businessman. He had a business where he dealt in gold and things like that. And he had a son named Ronnie. Ronnie had issues. His son Ronnie, he was into drugs, gambling, and he stole a lot. He had a few run-ins with the law. A lot of run-ins with the law, actually. But not ironically, but he was good at golf. He was good at golfing, and he would, he was in a lot of tournaments. He would win a lot, you know. He was just really good at golf. His dad paid for everything, and, you know, all his training and all that stuff. But his dad was the issue they had was Ronnie's running with the laws and his addiction to stealing and all that stuff. And, you know, that's what kind of pushed. That was the wrench in their relationship was that, you know, his dad didn't want him to do any of that. His dad was like, look, man, I'll continue to pay for your stuff, but you got to, you know, stop with all this mess, which is understandable, right? So, fast forward, he gets caught stealing again. And he gets brought in by the police. Now, by this time, you know, it's already been months. This is after they had found his body. The cops are like, well, look, I mean, you can understand. You got somebody who's close to the person. And a lot of times with these crimes, with murders like this, the first people you want to check is the family. You always want to check the family first. Like if a wife gets murdered, a woman gets murdered, you want to check her boyfriend or her husband first. Those are the first people that are always suspects. And vice versa, if a man gets murdered, it's usually his spouse or his significant other, whatever. Right? So the police bring in Ronnie, his son. And because they believe that his son, he was like, well, look, his son must have murdered him to supply his addiction to drugs and to stealing and all that stuff. Because his dad had money. But Ronnie was adamant that, no, I didn't. And, you know, they asked him during questioning, well, where were you on that night? He's like, well, I was home alone. And the cops were like, oh, yeah, you were conveniently home alone. Well, yeah, you got to understand. I can understand where the cops were coming from, because it does sound a little bit suspicious. You know, it's like, oh, conveniently you're home alone. And I know it is, and it is and it's not, because, yeah, people do stay home alone sometimes. Unfortunately, this guy's father got murdered. He just happened to be home alone. It could be one of those nights where he was just home watching TV or whatever, you know? You know, so whatever, you know what I mean? So now, that's the situation back in Joaquin County with that body that was found. Let's fast forward, or let's go back to the other part of this circle. So one day, Kathy gets up, the Porsche is not in the driveway, and Eric tells Kathy, you know, she's like, hey, where's the Porsche? What happened? He says, the CIA took the Porsche. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? Why would the CIA take the Porsche? He said, they want to make my life a living hell. I did a lot of work for them. I didn't want to do that type of work anymore. Yada, yada. You already know. He's telling her this whole Jason Bourne type story of himself. You know what I mean? Like, you know. So he says, look. And she's like, look, you're going to tell me the truth. You're going to tell me the truth. I need to know. You know what I mean? What happened? This is 6 years later. Okay, this is 6 years later. So, in the summer of 84, this is 6 years after that murder. After they were married. So, in the summer of 84, this is when all this, when they had taken a Porsche and all that stuff and everything. He tells her, when she, you know, after she asked him, hey, where's the Porsche? She said, look, man, this is what happened with the CIA. This is whatever. He tells her that his real name is Eric Stone. He said, like, I got to break it to you. My real name is Eric Stone. So in summer of that same summer, he says, look, I'm going to take you to where my parents lived, to where I lived and all that, whatever, so you could see where I came from. You could see my real story. And that kind of gave her a sense of relief. She was like, all right, he's coming clean now, for real. So they go to Exeter, California. And there's a house burned down there in that town. And he tells her, look, this is where my dad's house, my parents' house was. The house burned down. And, you know, and this is where I lived. And my parents died in this house. So he walks her over to the cemetery where his parents are supposed to be. He's walking around with her and he's like, the graves are supposed to be right here. Well, wait a minute, where is it? And he drops to his knees in one part of the cemetery. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe the lengths that they would go to. Oh my goodness, I can't believe this. Blah, blah, blah. He claimed that the CIA took the gravestones or the bodies of his parents to mess with him. Now, you understand, I mean, she wasn't a stupid woman, but at the same time, you know, when it's your spouse, you're like, man, I want to believe this dude or this woman, you know, whichever, whatever the case. And, but, I mean, this is far-fetched. Like, if somebody random just told you this story, you'd be like, yeah, whatever. But when you have an emotional connection to the person, it's really hard to, you know, to not believe. It's hard to not believe it. I mean, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to not believe it because you have that emotional connection to that person. So they return back to Colorado. And after that encounter, Eric started becoming more and more secretive, with her. Now, mind you, now this is 12 years that they're married now, 1995. 12 years they're married, okay? And she was feeling like really, she was really just like, what is going on? This guy's super secretive now. He's like being real, you know, he only tells her certain things. He's getting worse by the minute, you know what I mean? Or by the day, at least. So Kathy takes it upon herself to start investigating on her own. She really wants to get down to the nitty-gritty of this guy. I want to know who this guy is. What the hell's going on with this guy? So she called to confirm Eric Stone in Exeter, California, where he said he went, where he grew up, where his father's house burned down, where the cemetery was. She called the school where he supposedly went to in high school and asked the person who was in charge of the yearbooks or whatever, you know, the history of the school, hey, can you confirm if Eric Stone went to that school? Well, the coincidentally, I think it was like in 60-something, 63 or something that he went to that high school. Coincidentally, the guy who picks up the phone is the guy in charge for the yearbooks, but coincidentally, he also went to high school with Eric. Now, he said, well, yeah, there was an Eric in this school, but it wasn't Eric Stone. His name was Eric Wright. So Kathy obviously is taken back by this. Like, wait, no, well, I don't think I'm looking for Eric Wright. I'm looking for Eric Stone. And he says, well, ma'am, I went to this school in the same year that you're asking me about. And there was only like 93 students in the school. And I knew all of them. We all knew each other. And he said, there's only an Eric Wright. And he said, is he, you know, is he, what was he? I forgot. He was like 6'2". With brown hair. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, yeah, that's Eric Wright. And he described him exactly how Eric Stone, aka her husband, exactly what he looks like. She's like, yeah, Eric Wright. And she's like, well, his parents died in that fire and whatever. And she's like, and he's like, no, his parents are still alive. I just drove by their house earlier this week. And his sister still lives in this town. So, you know, you can imagine already how that goes. She was already, she was taken back again by that. Like, wait a minute, this guy, what the hell's going on? This guy, it just keeps getting crazier and crazier with this guy. So she confronts him again about it. She tells him everything she has found. Now, one thing, man, with a guy like this, you know, when somebody is willing to keep these secrets like that, you got to be very careful. Especially as a woman, you confront this guy like that. Or hell, even a man, you know what I mean? But a person like this, who's got the mentality to do something this big, is pretty dangerous to me. And it should be pretty dangerous, you know. But she confronted. I mean, it's her husband. I guess she feels like, hey, I can do that. She confronts him and says, look, this, I called you're the old town you live in, blah, blah, I know this. Some would say, why are you meddling in his past? But it's her husband. She has the right to do that. She has the right to know who she's married to. Normally, I wouldn't condone you digging in somebody else's thing. But this is a different case. This is her husband. And she has the right to, because that's part of her life and she needs to know what is in her life. She has a daughter and all that. So I do agree with her, you know. But, you know, so she confronts him. And at this point, then I think his true colors come out. So Eric Wright, we know that's his real name. He threatens her. He slaps her, pushes her, says, listen, I am a killer, and don't make me kill you. I won't hesitate to kill you. He threatens her. So she's scared to death. And you know, so he's you know, she's scared of this. So in the spring of 95, Shauna moved to California with the family, with her family. Shauna is her son, her daughter. She moved the family to California away from her. From her, you know, Kathy moved Shauna to California away from her so that, you know, to keep her away from this, because she's like, wait a minute, I don't know what this guy's going to do. And Kathy goes to live back to Colorado by herself. She moves in by herself alone. Well, obviously by herself alone. So, man. Well, she's living in Colorado. And the thing is, she's living in Colorado, but she's, you know, how Colorado, if you know Colorado, you know, it's, you know, they got the Rocky Mountains, whatever. But so she lives like kind of in a cabin, you know, it's one of those places where you got the house and then a lot of land between the neighbor. So it's like a cabin, woods, and then a neighbor. Now, if I'm me personally, and I'm a guy and I have guns, okay, and I know how to shoot, military, all that shit, trained, martial arts, all that. But if I'm a guy, I'm in that situation, I got beef like that with somebody, even if it's my ex-wife, who threatens, yo, I'm gonna kill you. This is just me, and this is why my wife says I ruin every movie, because I think tactfully. Every time I watch these stories and I hear them, I think tactfully. I'm like, it's not too tactical to move, especially as, you know, being a woman, and not because she's a woman, so I don't want to hear any anti-misogyny. I'm not a misogynist, but I'm not, you know, any of these super feminist comments. But in her case, she was, you know, I mean, you gotta look at the relative sizes. She was probably 120 pounds. This guy was, had a lot of weight on her, big. This guy was crazy, all right? He knew how to shoot, all that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that were going against her. You know what I mean? You got to think tactfully. I wouldn't have moved there. I would have moved somewhere where there's a lot of people, where there's always a lot of witnesses. You know what I mean? Where he has to go through a lot of people to get to me. You know, if you're moving in an apartment building in the city, he has to go through a lot of people. Potentially cameras, but even though this was 90 in, you know, early 90s, but still a lot of people, you know what I mean? Not in the middle of the woods where nobody, I mean, where he could get in from many different angles. But anyway, let's continue. But, you know, it is what it is. Now, one night, this is why I said what I said, Kathy was awakened by gunshots hitting her cabin. There were bullets hitting her cabin, you know, it was like, okay, she called the police and said, oh my God, there's somebody shooting at my cabin. Like, somebody was shooting at a freaking cabin. Like, what do you, you know what I mean? That's terrifying. Police went to investigate, but they couldn't find anything. They couldn't find any evidence. They couldn't find anything. She swore that it was him. She told him, look, I think it was my ex-husband, blah, blah, this, that, and the third. You know? So at that point, it was like, okay, she said enough is enough. I've got to know what the hell is up with this guy. So she starts her own very deep investigation, because the cops aren't going to do anything. They can't. They don't have any evidence, so they're not going to investigate him at all, you know? So she starts to dig deep and finds out how deep this rabbit hole with this guy goes. So it turns out that he was a deputy in California. He was a law enforcement officer. Very young. He was doing very good as a deputy in California. And he was getting promoted really fast. He almost made, I think he was lieutenant. And he was also married with a child. And his wife's father was a judge. And then she found out that he had quit the force and he went into the precious metals business. And it was crazy because, you know, he was doing really good in the police department. Everybody liked him. He was like, yo, this guy's really good at a cop, being a cop, you know. Followed all the rules, did all that, this, that, and the third, yada, yada, yada. And as she's doing her research, and then this is going on for months, mind you, okay? She's doing investigations, 3-4 months. She's just digging deep, calling all kinds of people, getting things. She has a friend helping her. She finds a newspaper clipping of him vanishing, of Eric Wright vanishing, Deputy Eric Wright vanishing. So they go back and they're like, what the heck's going on? This guy vanished from that family. Well, back to that time. Let's go back to that time. Now, when he was married, he disappeared around that time. So his wife actually obviously called the force. Like, hey, what's going on? My husband just disappeared. Her father was a judge. So, you know, it's kind of high profile. And during the investigation of his disappearance, they find his car. And they find blood and a bullet hole from a .38 in his car. And they went and had the blood tested. It was just back in the 90s, so it took a while for the blood samples to get back. And it turns out the blood samples were... this part I didn't understand, and if you guys go watch the episode, you can explain to me how... whatever. But the blood that they found, it wasn't like a pool, giant pool. It was just like drops of blood, like dripping, but enough where it was like, oh man, something happened here. They said it was insect blood. Now, I don't know. I couldn't find anything on that. I was like, insect blood? What the hell? They said that's not his blood. And the hole was, they concluded it was from a .38. Now, the wife told the cops, yeah, he owned a .38. So, you know, it was like, okay, his own gun shot his car. It was abandoned. They found this. They find insect blood. The authorities concluded, well, this guy did not want to be found. He doesn't want to be found. So he bailed. And once that happened, there's nothing they can do. As of now, they don't have anything to charge him with a crime. All he did was leave. It's not illegal to leave. It's not illegal to, you know what I mean? So, Kathy also realized at that point, back to Kathy, is that he never got divorced. He was still married when he married her. Only he married her under a different name. Now, Kathy, remember, she was doing all this investigations, whatever. When the authorities went to go, when they were looking for him, when his original wife went and reported him missing, they went to his office or whatever. And because, you know, he had that business with the precious metals, and they found a book basically how to change your whole identity or whatever. And, you know, that's when they told her, look, he doesn't want to be found, blah, 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 whatever. Now, back to Kathy. Kathy shared all her findings with the police. And they're like, look, this is everything I found. She has so much stuff on him that she had gone through. I think it was a whole year of just things that she found. And she just put us like books together on him and all that. She had so much, information, maybe evidence. Not evidence, but so much information that they were like, wait a minute. Let's see if any of this information this woman gave us correlates with any cold cases. So as they were looking, it just happened to hit the cold. It happened to hit detectives back in California, where that body was found in that aqueduct. And this was a cold case from the 80s. They never were able to find anything on that case. Nothing. The case just went cold. So the Lester Marks case. Now, coincidentally, Lester Marks was also a precious metals businessman. Lester Marks was missing some gold bars. Now, that's when police started to get to connect pieces. And one of the pieces of evidence they found in Lester Marks' office was a phone number. And the phone number was a phone number that was owned by Eric Wright at the time. Or, you know, Deputy Wright or whatever you want to call it. But that wasn't enough evidence to go and bring him in and say, hey, look, you killed this person just because he has a phone number. Now, they had to go and figure out what the connection really was. So they went and talked to Ronnie Marks. Ronnie Marks, remember, was the son of Lester Marks, who was, in trouble with the law a lot. It just so happened he was in prison at the time. He was in jail. So they went to go speak to him. And Ronnie, they asked him, do you know the name Eric Wright? And he was like, yeah, I know that name. And Ronnie explained to him, look, I was arrested by a dirty cop. And he said he would help him beat the case that he was on at the time if he would get him the gold that his father had. And he was like, okay, I'll help you get that gold. You know, I'll help you get that gold if you help me beat this case. Remember, Eric Wright's, his father-in-law was a judge, and he was a deputy about to be a lieutenant. So he told him, look, I can help you beat this case. You got to help me buy that gold from your father or whatever. He said, yeah. He said, yeah, you know, I'll put you in touch with the gold. I'll tell my father. So what happened was he went, and Eric Wright actually did Ronnie dirty because he never helped him at all. He just went to go see his father. While they were talking, his father was like, okay, you're going to help my son. Here's these 8 bars of gold or 10 bars of gold, whatever it was, worth a lot of money. And, you know, he's like, Eric Wright told him, well, I have a problem. He's like, what's the problem? He's like, I don't have money for this. And he was like, what? He's like, well, I guess it's not really my problem. It's more your problem. And he goes and he beats the hell out of him in the office, kills him, murders him in the office, beats him. He strangles him, puts him in the bag, puts the chain around him, dumps him in the aqueduct, takes the gold. And Eric disappears. The manhunt is launched, and they find him in Mexico. They find him living in Mexico, and he gets deported, but he never confesses to the murder. All the witnesses, but remember, this case is already 20 years old by the time they find him. So he's gotten away with this for 20 years. All the witnesses by that time are either really old, they're dead, or nowhere to be found. Now, the thing was, he does not know what evidence they have on him. So he thinks they have so much evidence on him, so he takes a plea deal for manslaughter. So he gets 6 years in prison. And we end up within the he gets a measly 6 years in prison. I don't understand that in any way, shape, or form. But that's the way between that time after he killed Lester Marks is where he created Steve Markham, which is the name that he married Kathy with. And that's where he started that life. He did his 6 years, and he died in 2008 of like a heart attack or something like that. He died in 2008. So ended up dying anyway. I think he died in prison, actually, in 2008. And Kathy ended up passing away in 2016 due to cancer. And listen, look, Kathy, the only reason, and the authorities said it, and even if you watch the episode, you'll see Kathy passed. The only reason that they caught this man, Steve Markham, is because of Kathy, because she did her due diligence, and, you know, which is really dangerous. You know, it's like not everybody would walk that road, because this guy was really dangerous. This guy was really, really dangerous. I mean, somebody's willing to do, not just because he killed, but I mean, you're willing to lie on your life like that, to take people's livelihoods like that, you know. And I'm not talking about just the physical goal. I'm talking about you marry these women, you tell them, hey, look, I love you, you have kids, you got a daughter. He just left his daughter, you know, and just left. And then he marries this other woman who has a daughter, you know, makes them fall in love with him, and just leaves. I mean, he just destroyed lives left and right. Even Ronnie, even though Ronnie was doing criminal stuff, but still, that was his father. You know, doesn't mean the guy, you know, that he doesn't have feelings and things like that. You know, the guy killed his father, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of lives ruined here. A lot of reputations, lives, all that ruined. And, you know, but Kathy was brave enough to take it upon herself and, you know, do her thing. She did her thing, man. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, guys, that is the story of Kathy and Steve Markham. Kathy Markham. Well, not really Kathy Markham, but Kathy and Steve Markham. That was his real name. And the twistedness of this guy. You know what I'm saying? And as always, man, I still got the same social media. You know, I said, just because it's season 4 doesn't mean it's going to change. Same social media. CFM_podcast on Twitter and on Instagram. I think it's Creepy Cigar CF Mysteries. I'm rarely on there, but I'm on there. Okay, I'm on there. So don't forget to like, subscribe, follow me on social media. You can probably get me on Twitter faster, or you can also leave a message on this podcast on Anchor FM and everywhere else where you listen your podcast too, right? And as always, I will see you on the next Smoke.